Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. A couple months ago, some billboards went up around the metro Denver area, atheist billboards, and they were put up by a coalition of atheist organizations, humanist groups, and one of those groups was Metro State Atheist, referring to Metro College, downtown Denver, and Joel Guttormson is one of the organizers of that group, and I wanted to welcome into studio Joel. Welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
How you doing? I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Joel, you and I disagree on the matter of does God exist?
Yep.
And so I want to thank you for coming here. We have mutual friends, acquaintances who helped us organize this.
Absolutely.
Perhaps you could take the lead, and I'll try to sit back for a while. Tell us who you are, what your organization is about. And then if you could, rather than me making my typical arguments against atheism, right, I'd like you to present your worldview, your understanding, and you take the lead and I'll follow.
Okay, that works for me. My name is Joel Guttormson, as you just mentioned. I go to Metro State College of Denver. I am a theoretical math major, almost done. I got this semester and one left. I'm a minor in linguistics, which I've already finished. My group, Metro State Atheists, is an affiliate of the Center for Inquiry, who is a nonprofit international umbrella organization uniting freethinkers, secularists, atheists, and humanist groups. We're also affiliated with the Secular Student Alliance, and our purpose is to further acceptance of atheism in society, as well as to challenge misrepresentations of atheists and to defend religious freedom and separation of church and state. Those are our basic main tenets of our organization.
All right. Okay, and Joel, separation of church and state, as a Christian, I do agree they should be separate. Mm-hmm. There are differences. A pastor shouldn't be trying a suspected murderer and punishing him. That's the job of the government.
Absolutely.
And the government is not the one to minister the gospel of Jesus Christ the way the church is, I believe. So I'm all for separation. I just disapprove of the hostility of government toward Jesus Christ, Christianity. Okay, so thank you for explaining to us Metro State Atheist. You guys were involved with the billboards that went up.
Yeah.
Don't believe in God, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were on the local news broadcast. They interviewed you.
Yep. I can't remember what order you were in.
And I was on the same broadcast. And we have mutual friends who said, hey, that's Joel. And then they said, hey, that's Bob. What are Joel and Bob doing on the same broadcast? And we made a little graphic. We took the artwork from the billboard, and we put a signature at the bottom of it, and it said, "Sign God."
Yeah, so, I saw the – I have it recorded still.
Yeah, don't believe in God, you're not alone, sign God. So we sort of changed the positioning of it to let people know just because you don't believe in something, you might not believe in gravity, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So tell us about, you know, why you don't believe in God.
Well, I was raised Catholic. Just like I think a lot of my family was. One of my uncles isn't Catholic, but either way, I went to Our Lady of Lourdes until I was in fifth grade. The reason for leaving had nothing to do with anything the church did to me. There was no hostile action taken on anybody's part.
Right.
It was mostly a change of circumstance at home. And then I started going to public school.
When I was raised Catholic also, I went to public school in high school, went to Catholic grammar school.
And so I could have finished eighth grade. I didn't. I went to, in Catholic school. Obviously, I'm in college now. I had to finish eighth grade at some point.
Right, yeah.
So I went to public school until high school, and now I'm in college. I stopped going to church after I left Our Lady of Lourdes by my own choice. I told my mom I don't want to go anymore, and it had nothing to do with, like I said, I wasn't hostile towards it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was, 8 years old, 9 years old? I just didn't want to get up there later in the morning anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted my Sundays to myself. It was kind of a child selfish thing. I still believed. I just didn't feel like going to church.
Yeah.
So I
bet a lot of kids, given the opportunity, would say, I don't want to go to church.
Yeah. I mean, of course, at that age, until, you know, you're old enough to care about it.
You said that was when you were in fifth grade?
In and about. I'm trying to remember how old I was.
Yeah, you would have been a little older then. We have kids that are in second grade. So you might have been around 10 or 11. Something.
Yeah, somewhere. But, you know, still,
young,
it's
young.
I didn't feel like getting up that early at 10. I didn't start really thinking about my belief or religion or atheism at all until I was in high school, and significantly into high school, towards the middle of my sophomore year in high school. And that's when I started reading up on it. And the more I read about it, even at that age, just the things I found out at reading the Bible, reading opposite views, the atheistic view, maybe even Eastern things, I came to the conclusion that there most likely isn't a God. Not the affirmative statement that there is not, just most likely.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, Joel, when I was going to church back then, I was bored to tears. I could hardly take it. I used to try to, they'd hand out papers, the missal letter, whatever. I'd try to find the whole alphabet on every page, see how far I could get to find letters of the alphabet on each page.
Wow.
I was just bored. And I was taught evolution in our Catholic grammar school. I went for 8 years. And then friends believed in reincarnation. I was taught that. I ended up exploring reincarnation, Eastern mysticism. So I didn't know what to believe. Then I went to public high school, and that's when I became a committed believer in Jesus Christ.
Right.
But, okay, so keep going. Interesting. So you were a junior in high school, sophomore?
Sophomore, junior in high school. I had started reading stuff earlier when I was a sophomore, but I started, you know, getting into it as an interest later in my sophomore year. Then, let's see. I got to college. I mean, I had been doing this, you know, for several years. I saw Chalmer, and
he's a co-founder of Metro State Atheist.
Yeah, he's the vice president at the time.
Chalmer, Chalmer.
Yep. He had a table out with a fellow founder that's no longer with us.
Did he die?
No. It was a woman.
It was a she.
Yeah. She due to personal events at home, she couldn't keep going to college, and so couldn't run the group.
Okay.
I then took over. We went through a couple of names, which were fairly long and convoluted, and we came up with Metro State Atheist later.
All right.
And then we were exploring, like, who could help us? Like, you know, what are the other secular organizations out there? And we found the Center for Inquiry and the Student Secular Alliance, who help us out with materials, just telling people who we are, and grants and so forth for projects we want to do.
All right. So what is it then that brought you to this view that there is no God? Let me ask you this. Let's say you say, well, this reason, and this reason led me to conclude there's probably no God.
Right.
What if I could give you a strong answer to those challenges? How would you process that? Some atheists don't want to know if somebody has an answer. They just don't want to hear it.
To be closed-minded in that way is not the hallmark of a rational person. In order to be fully rational, you have to say, okay, I'm going to look at all the evidence, which is what I did. Like I said, I didn't just read the opposing stuff in high school. I read
and evidence was a great word, evidence, because we need to look at the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the New Testament says faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Right.
So you look at evidence and you see where it leads you. So, okay, so what led you to conclude that there's no God?
It's a number of things, as you just said, like, you had just enumerated that I may give several reasons in them. As I looked through, I found that there were some historical and other inconsistencies in the Bible that didn't not only sit well with me personally, but that after further research found that were blatantly false.
You're right.
Which isn't to say there isn't some in there, but I found things that were a little that were
so things that were stated in the Bible that you said, well, this can't be true for whatever reason.
And I also came to be what would be called an empiricist.
All right.
I believe you talked about this with Dan Barker about knowing things through the five senses.
Yeah.
Looking for empirical evidence.
Right.
And basing our opinions on that. And, of course, empirical evidence can change, so therefore our opinions can change in some instances. As you did, I was taught evolution. I'm not a biologist. I have no interest in biology. It's not my field. I know of it. I know about it. I know enough to hold a conversation with a seven-year-old about it. But
and I'm fascinated by biology, microbiology, DNA. Darwin thought the cell was a pretty simple blob of protoplasm.
Yeah.
Now we know it's more complicated than a 747.
And that's
a
great
shuttle.
That's a great example of how our knowledge can be furthered by more
research.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay. Do you want to say a little more, or should I ask you questions about these so far?
I don't know. There's some things I would like to, as part of our mantra, I'd like to be able to dispel some myths that maybe some believers of all faiths have about us, not just Christians or anybody else for that matter.
Okay.
If you were to ask me, well, what do you classify yourself as? I would say that I am an atheist agnostic. Mm-hmm. I don't believe and I don't know. There's a problem in asserting certainty in this matter because we don't have...
It's hard to prove a negative.
Exactly.
And what I do in a conversation like this is I will stipulate that you don't have to prove that there's no God on a planet furthest from the Earth out there in a galaxy far, far away. We could just talk about the here and now, all the evidence we see around us, and either we could show that God exists from the evidence here and now, or we can't, and that should settle the matter. So I realize that it's difficult to prove a negative, but therefore I stipulate that you don't have to worry about what's the case on the other side of the universe.
Right. In terms of my conclusions of it, as being an agnostic atheist, you can be both. There's this weird notion, and you see it like on the networking sites, they ask you, what religion are you? And agnostic is listed separately from atheism. Agnosticism isn't a particular position you can take because Gnosticism has to do with knowledge. That's the meaning of it. It's, you know, not knowing.
Not knowing.
And then where
so
we have...
So you say you don't know, and that's why you say you're open to evidence.
Exactly. And that's also when you look at theism is belief, as you know. Atheism is not believing. And believing and knowledge are not, they're not on the same tier. They're not the same word. They have different meanings. So when I say I'm an agnostic atheist, it's saying I don't know,
okay,
but I don't believe as well.
Joel, we're speaking with Joel Guttormson of Metro Stay Atheist. On the two reasons you gave so far that are somewhat specific, historical inconsistencies in the Bible, and that you're an empiricist, and you're a theoretical mathematician, right? Some of the principles of math, can you smell them? Do you smell them? Do you taste them? Do you? I don't think they have a scent, do they, mathematical principles? Like, if you rubbed your hand on a piece of paper over an equation, could you feel that it's valid?
It would. If I was blind and it was in Braille, I might be able to do just that.
Well, if you're not blind, there are numbers on a piece of paper with an equal sign.
Right.
And for you to determine whether that equation is true or false, it's not by smelling it, right, or tasting it.
Well, of course not. It's reason, and that's what I...
Reason, logic, the laws of logic, the laws of math, they're not physical.
No.
Right? They're not physical. So you said you're an empiricist. You care a lot about what your five senses could tell you. But if you only used your five senses, do you think you'd get your degree in theoretical math?
Absolutely. I can.
Well, you just said that the laws of mathematics are not physical; they're not material.
No, but when you're reading a mathematical equation, that part of it's physical.
You're seeing it.
Yeah, it's the
but you could also hear it, right?
The understanding of it, yes. You can hear it and you can see it, but it's understanding it takes place in the brain, which is a physical object, which will you can analyze internally in your head what's going on.
So let's say the laws of logic, like the law of non-contradiction. That something cannot be true and false at the same time and in the same way. Mm-hmm. We could write that on a piece of paper and look at it with our eyes. Mm-hmm. So we can read it. And that's how we share ideas from one person to another person. That's one way. But it's not the dots on the piece of paper that conclude us that that law of non-contradiction is valid. It's the idea, right? It's the idea. It's not the dots. It's not the sound waves. When I state the law of non-contradiction, it's not the formation of the sound waves that convince us that this is a valid, useful law. Mm-hmm. It's not the dots on a piece of paper. It's the idea. And the idea, the logic, the laws of logic, do you think they're material? Do you think they're physical?
Well, of course not. However, any of the, like you were just saying, and just hearing it's not going to prove it to be true, but you can test it. With things that you can touch, feel, smell, and so forth.
Well, and also you could test it with things that you can't touch,
of course,
or feel, like theoretical math.
But wouldn't you?
Is not something you can taste.
Of course, in terms of testing the law of non-contradiction, you would draw your examples from experience, whether you can see.
Well, some experience,
right?
There's some things we could think about, things we could never experience. Mm-hmm. We could think about things that are not physical, like loyalty or bitterness or envy or mathematical concepts,
right?
Or the square root of negative numbers. I mean, that's not a physical concept. There's theoretical concepts. We live in the world of ideas. In fact, I think it's more ideas that make up human beings than matter. So you think that if you only limited yourself to your five senses, you could get a degree in theoretical math?
I'm doing it right now.
You're not. You admit that the laws of math are not material. So you're doing something not material.
I'm internalizing it and analyzing it in my physical brain, and that doesn't mean I'm drawing on something higher. I'm thinking about it, and I have help from my teacher is always good too.
Well, forgive me if I press it a little further, but Joel, and we're speaking with Joel Guttormson, Metro State atheist. The laws of logic, if they're not physical, then it's not like you've taken material things in your mind and then you're processing them. The laws of logic inherently are not physical. The laws of grammar. Right, that a noun and a verb should agree in gender and number.
Mm-hmm.
A plural noun should take a plural verb. That's not physical. And yet you use the laws of grammar in this show and when you write a paper for school.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think the laws of grammar are physical?
Well, like we were just talking about, whether they're the laws of logic or not, the laws of logic are inherent in our reality and can be derived from
I agree.
So,
but are they physical? Are they material?
They need not be.
They cannot be.
They show themselves in nature, but it's not necessary for them to manifest themselves physically.
So, Joel, in this conversation we've just had, I assert that when you say you're an empiricist, mm-hmm. that you highly value the data you get from your five senses, mm-hmm. but even in your conclusion that you're an empiricist, you are using capabilities that are not physical. You are using reason and logic, and those things don't come from your five senses. Reason and logic.
They do.
If they do, you got to show us how, because I assert that the laws of logic are not physical.
Let me ask you, would you agree that the brain is physical matter?
Yeah, the brain is physical matter. Ideas are not.
And the neurons that fire between them are what constitute our ideas.
No. No. Neurons are like the phone system has a backbone. The internet has a backbone. There's a US West Quest. The phone system has switches mm-hmm. that connect millions of phones together. The brain is like that. But ideas, logic, reason, love, commitment, envy, ambition, these things are not physical. They're not made up of atoms and molecules. And we humans, that's evidence that the non-physical world exists, and it's just as real as the physical world. So how is it that we humans are able to process ideas when ideas are not physical? It's because we're not just physical. We're also spirit. We're body, soul, and spirit.
Let me take it back to what you're saying about the brain. What the phone system lacks is a capability of memorizing certain things or being able to learn certain things.
Right.
When you learn reason or learn any concept, it is stored. Not only do you think about it in your physical brain, but you also store it there via chemical and electrical signals, which can be retrieved. And that's what I mean by ideas and logic and so forth may not be physical, but once the idea is internalized into any one person, it can be used by someone as if it is a physical object.
You know, Albert Einstein wrestled with this concept. He was an atheist, but he wrestled with this, and today it's called Einstein's Gulf by some scientist and linguist. He said that it's an unbridgeable gulf between matter and ideas. You can't get from one to the other. By the laws of physics, ideas should not arise because they're not physical. And Einstein addressed this idea occasionally over a period of years. It's not like a momentary lapse in reason that he had. And I assert that he's right, Joel, in that if you focus on this, it will help agnosticism, lack of knowledge, don't know. It will help you know that there is a realm that's not physical. And in fact, every time you use reason and logic, you are operating in that realm so that your brain isn't all of who you are. You're also something non-physical, your body, soul, and spirit. And so plants, a plant does not have a soul or a spirit. It can't process ideas. It can't feel pain. Animals have some degree of a soul, but you have body, soul, and spirit. So you're able to, in a sophisticated way, process ideas.
Interesting you bring that up in that way. Einstein, of course, was dealing with a physics that has been improved upon, to be quite frank, since his time. We have quantum mechanics. We actually have a theory from Stephen Hawking, an improved Einsteinian-Newtonian physics, which he helped develop. So I don't know if I can necessarily agree with him just based on the fact that he is Einstein, that he was a physicist. He wasn't a neurobiologist, nor was he a linguist. I mean, I know he dealt with the problem, and I applaud him for that, and it's an interesting idea.
Certainly, quantum mechanics, there's been a lot learned since Einstein, but I would submit that there's nothing that has been learned in the field of physics or linguistics that would answer his observation. In 1936, Albert Einstein famously wrote, "The most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it is comprehensible." In other words, that we have ideas to understand it.
Right.
And in 1944, he was talking about atheist Bertrand Russell, and he said, "To get from ideas, from matter to ideas, is a gulf logically unbridgeable." Okay, I think we beat that one to death, though, Joel.
Yeah.
I hope you consider it, because logic, the laws of logic are not physical, and that's evidence that there is a non-physical reality. You said historical inconsistencies in the Bible. Christians who believe in the Bible, we don't believe that God came into existence with the Bible.
Right.
Right. There are billions of theists around the world. Some have never heard of the Bible. Others don't believe it. So even if there were a historical inaccuracy in the Bible, that wouldn't mean that there's no creator.
Well, of course not. What I mean to say about that is not only when I was looking for those when I was in high school, these were very superficial things that I found. It was, I didn't start looking deeper until I had a more sophisticated idea of what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. This is much later. This is when I got into college, mm-hmm. When I started looking at it more critically.
If there's an economist who's right on, his theories really do describe how economies function, and there's somebody who has an axe to grind, maybe they want a government contract, and so they take this guy's writings and they have to discredit him. Would you say it's easy to discredit some body of work if you have a bias or an axe to grind?
Of course it is. Like I said, when I started reading the Bible in order to find out what I really believed, I wasn't out for an axe to grind. I was really trying to understand it.
Well, right. But let's say you went and you looked at a list of criticisms of the Bible put together by atheists. So we could go through that list and you'd probably get a different perspective
right.
on the items in that list from me than you would an atheist who's laughing at the Bible and saying, look at how absurd that is.
Well, of course I would. I mean, that can go for anything. That can go for any
large body. Oh, right, exactly.
And what I would, like I said, I didn't do that. I didn't just go out and look at the Skeptic's Annotated Bible online. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the last resource I use.
Mm-hmm.
And anything I do get from there, I know they're biased. I absolutely know they're biased.
Mm.
So what I do is I take anything they tell me, and I go to BibleGateway.com, which is...
And check it out. That's
and
very,
I check it.
That's good.
And I've and to it be
that's
admitted,
admirable.
I have found things that are correct in what they're saying by don't just look at the... Because they usually give you just one verse. Mm-hmm. I pull up the context. I pull up the whole thing.
Right.
And I see, okay, are they right or they're wrong? They've been right on some things. They've been just utterly biased in others. That's how I go about... For instance, let's say I'm at a table at our school. And someone says, well, such and such did this in the Bible, and this story's in there. I say, okay, let me look it up for you real quick. And then we debate it, and then it goes the other way. When I assert something, I've told people things that are in the Bible, and they go, that can't be in there.
Right. We're almost out of time. It's been said that a Christian has to explain why bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
but then the atheist has to explain everything else. And there is a universe of extraordinary beauty and sophistication and obvious design. And I'd encourage you to consider that there's not just the physical realm, but ideas and designs inherently are not physical. And that's evidence that there is a creator God.
My response to that would be that everything you just said, design and beauty, those are all subjective claims. Those are things that, for instance, if...
Design's not subjective. If an eye is not designed for vision, it can't see. So design is not subjective. Beauty is subjective to the eye of the beholder. Joel Guttormson, I want to thank you very much for joining me in studio.
Thank you very much. I'd like to encourage people to, if they want to know any more, it's at metrostateatheists.wordpress.com.
Okay, so your blogs are at metrostateatheist.wordpress.com?
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Joel Guttormson, I appreciate you being here in studio.
Thank you.
And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada is such a neat school. If you're in the metro area, consider Maranatha. And our website is kgov.com.
Come out and hear Eric Metaxas, who wrote the book that inspired the movie Amazing Grace. Colorado Right to Life has reserved the steps of the Capitol in Denver to hold a rally and then a march to the 16th Street Mall when it's teeming with people at noon on Thursday, January 22nd. Eric Metaxas wrote the best-selling Amazing Grace, documenting the relentless effort of perhaps the greatest abolitionist of all time, William Wilberforce, who worked for 46 years to end slavery. Abortion was legalized in our state 41 years ago. Yet in 2008, we had 585,000 Coloradans vote for personhood to end all abortions. Don't be discouraged. Stand up for God and His command, do not murder. Come out at noon on January 22nd to the Capitol and hear Eric Metaxas encourage us with the lessons learned by Wilberforce in his life's work to recognize the slave's right to life and liberty. See ColoradoRightToLife.org for more information.